Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the April NJEDA Board Meeting. At this time, all phone participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public attending by phone will be advised to press one, then zero on your telephone keypad to be placed in queue to speak and provide comment. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star, then 0. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chairman Terry O'Toole. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Operator. I'm going to call the meeting to order. Tim, could you read the Open Public Meeting Notice, please?
Good morning, Chairman. Thank you. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice of this meeting has been sent to the Star-Ledger and the Times of Trenton at least 48 hours prior to this meeting. Meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State.
Thank you, Tim. Manira, could you call the roll?
Yes. Chairman Terry O'Toole.
Present.
Vice Chair Charles Farlow.
Here.
Bill Elagia.
Here.
Virginia Bauer.
Here.
Marcia Marley.
Here.
Robert Shimko.
Here.
Joel Antoine Johnson.
Here.
Jamira Sermon for the Executive Branch.
Here.
Aaron Binder representing State Treasurer Moyo.
Here.
Banking Commissioner Justin Zimmerman.
Here.
Keith White representing Labor Commissioner Angelo.
Here.
Elizabeth Dragon representing DEP Commissioner Sean LaTourette.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Manira. I'm going to move to approval of the previous month's minutes. There's one set of meeting minutes for approval today, the March 7th, 2024 regular meeting minutes. Before members of the board are the meeting minutes for review and approval, I would ask a board member to state their name for the record when making a motion or a second. Thank you. Could I hear a motion to approve the March 7th board meeting minutes?
Dragon motion.
Thank you. Second?
And one after second.
Any discussions? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
The opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the meeting minutes are approved. I will make some brief chairman's remarks. Good morning and welcome to the April board meeting. As we observe Earth Month, the NJEDA remains committed to achieving Governor Murphy's goal of transitioning to 100% clean energy by 2035, the most ambitious clean energy goal in the nation. NJEDA's clean energy initiatives and programs, including the ones being presented today, are helping to not only achieve Governor Murphy's clean energy goals, but will also create a stronger, healthier, and cleaner environment for generations of New Jersey residents to come. Today is a momentous day. The board will be asked to consider the creation of the much-anticipated New Jersey Green Bank, which will make investments in the clean energy sector that will help advance the state's efforts to facilitate an equitable energy transition. The Green Bank, which is a component of the 2019 Energy Master Plan, will be dedicated to investing in projects, technologies, and companies that align with the state's climate goals, including areas such as zero emissions transportation, building decarbonization and resiliency, and clean energy generation and storage. The New Jersey Green Bank will offer loans, provide credit enhancements, and other financial vehicles, including equity, to attract private capital to enable the state to reach its climate goals. Today, we will also be asked to consider approving a $7 million grant program that will prepare New Jersey residents for green economy careers with a particular focus on advancing diversity, equity, and inclusion, and serving overburdened communities. The Green Workforce Training Grant Challenge will position New Jersey residents for jobs in the green economy by providing skill development, workforce training, job placement, and other related support to develop and implement workforce programs. Grants of up to $1.5 million will be made available to cover costs associated with planning, soft launches, capital costs, and program implementation costs. Green Workforce Training Grant Challenge was created by the NJEDA in collaboration with the Governor's Council on the Green Economy and the Wind Institute for Innovation and Training. If approved, these programs will add to an already robust lineup of incentives, including the New Jersey Windport, the NJ Clean Energy Loans Program, and New NJ ZIP, which has provided hundreds of electric and medium-duty commercial vehicles for small businesses in the state. Clearly, clean energy is not only improving our environment and our economy, but also creating family-sustaining career opportunities for citizens of New Jersey. With that, I'll now turn it over to Tim for his CEO report.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On one happy note, if my calendar is correct, the April 2023 board meeting was your first board meeting in the chairman's seat. And so one trip around the sun for U.S. chairman. So thank you for your leadership and your partnership and your advice and support. I know I echo the sentiments of the governor. Doing an extraordinary job as chairman and indispensable leadership to this organization, which I certainly agree with and deeply appreciate all the time and energy and good advice that you bring, not just to these board meetings, but to me and to our team in between meetings as well. On a much more somber note, I do want to take a moment. Doug York, who many of you know, had been with the EDA for a number of years and left him for a really fun opportunity at Princeton University earlier this year, has been in a bike accident and is, as of right now, fighting like hell. And I spoke to his daughters this morning, one of his daughters this morning, and let him know that everyone in this room and everyone in this organization had him in our thoughts and prayers and was pulling for him. So please join me in that. First Lady spoke to his family as well to convey the best wishes of the governor and First Lady and the entire administration. Doug's a great guy, and we miss him, and he's a fighter, and I know he's going to fight like hell to deal with this. But please keep it in your thoughts and prayers as we go through not just this meeting, but today. I also want to do a recognition for a special guest we have. Lisa Asari is here. Lisa is the newly minted president and CEO of the Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Authority, which is called MIA, not anything else. It's called MIA. It was actually 2 weeks ago, almost to this minute, that Lisa was unanimously in this room appointed the president and CEO by the MIA board, which I'm privileged to sit on, along with a number of colleagues from this board who sit on that, including labor commissioners on that board, treasurers on that board, the Health and Human Services commissioners. The only person who's disappointed about this news is DHS Commissioner Sarah Edelman, who lost Lisa from her team, but gladly gave her up to this extraordinary opportunity. We'll talk more later in the program about the Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Center. We have a big milestone in that. But I think if you were sitting around imagining the ideal person to lead this effort, that person that you would sort of construct in your mind would be a hell of a lot like Lisa, sorry. And so really excited to have her. And she's also joined the governor's cabinet, so welcome to that as well. So again, thrilled to have Lisa here, and we'll hear from her a little bit with Tara when we talk about some of the big milestones today around Maternal and Infant Health First Lady's signature project to drive real change in addressing the terrible scourge of disparities in maternal and infant health outcomes in New Jersey, particularly here in Trenton. A couple of just quick hits along the way. You have my written report in your pack. Just a couple of quick highlights. While we were in this board meeting last month, the governor and First Lady and others were in Asbury Park, kicking off North to Shore 2.0, bigger, better, newer, fresher than even last year, which we're really excited about. That's going to be in June in Asbury Park in Newark in Atlantic City, with some add-on events in places like Hoboken and other places around the state, kicking up the innovation and ideas component of that, but a really exciting, I think, signature event for us and for the state, and something we're really incredibly excited about. This board had last year approved funding to NJPAC to support that effort. Conductor of that orchestra. So really exciting there. We also just last week opened applications for the Atlantic City Food Security Grant Program that this board had approved, I think, in October at our October meeting. Something the governor and Lady and lots of folks had asked us to really dig in and drive as a, not just to address longstanding, really pernicious food security challenges in Atlantic City, but also as a template for how we can bring that playbook of grants and loans and technical assistance to grants, in this case grants, to other really acute food deserts across the state. So shout out to Tara and her team and lots of other folks who helped drive that. Those applications are open, I think, till the end of Middle of May. Thank you, Terry. And so really excited to be leaning in and making a difference in Atlantic City's food security framework. We also had a really couple of nice events that I got to be at. One was something we hosted that is Andrew here. Andrew Gross, our Director of International Trade and Investment. We launched something called the Global Economic Index report, which really ranked and sort of characterized New Jersey's international engagement with big trading partners and big foreign direct investment partners, most importantly. We had an event with probably 20, 25 consuls general, representatives of general consulates, mostly from New York, in our offices in Newark. You know, I think under Governor Murphy's leadership, I think one of the trademarks of his time in office has been our re-engagement with global economy, so with trips to Israel, Germany, Ireland, governor went to France at one point, India, East Asia, Japan, Korea, and Taiwan, and probably more to come in the ensuing year and a half here. Our global engagement has really paid huge dividends, and that report, I think, is a really good example of that. Just a couple things on the forward radar. Tomorrow, a bunch of us will be in Princeton. Chairman, you're joining us for that. For a really important kind of next step in the state's evolution towards being a leader in the emerging AI industry. Princeton University and the EDA are sort of jointly hosting, is that Princeton, so they're really hosting, a big conference around AI, around all elements of AI, sort of use case applications, the technology elements, the ethics and sort of societal implications of AI. The governor will be there, the president of Princeton will be there. I don't know if this is public or not, but there's some pretty important corporate leaders that are going to be there. And so, again, really an important milestone. You know, the governor and I and Eric Brophy were at a company called CoreWeave yesterday in Roseland, which is one of the fastest-growing AI companies in the world, headquartered right here in New Jersey, and growing like a weed and raising lots of money and making huge investments in New Jersey. So there's a huge there around AI. We'd obviously announced back in December, under Kathleen's leadership, the investments in or the potential investment at the Princeton AI Hub, part of our Strategic Innovation Center program. We just released a request for information for corporate partners, potential corporate partners, earlier this week, so rolling that rock forward as well. And then as we continue to think about economic diversification and new industries, both AI and film are front and center on a trip that the governor and first lady, myself, Kathleen, John Crowley, our new film commission director, Choose New Jersey, are heading out to California Sunday to Wednesday of next week. Spending a couple days up in Northern California, principally focused on AI and tech, and then heading south to LA to do a bunch of film and TV marketing and business development. Really good sets of meetings for all of those. I happen to have a good time with everything. Yesterday, the First Lady and I, and John and Steve Gorlick, our Emeritus Film Commission Director, were on the set of a movie called Miller by Marriage in Morristown, and Burns, Juliana Margulies. That beats most set visits, the site visits, in terms of it was a little more fun than a regular site visit to be on a movie set, but we think about the economic impact that film and TV is having in New Jersey, all across the state, not just with the big studios that are going to be developed, which are really exciting, but also in Morristown. The small business community was very happy to have a lot of people eating a lot of food and using a lot of services in Morristown for a couple weeks while they take over a house and film them. I have no idea if the movie can be any good or not. It seemed good. The scene where they're watching seemed good, but again, really significant impact of film and television and the tax credits that we deploy there. Miller by Marriage is
tax credit from them.
Really important driver of those industries. So, again, lots going on there. You also have in your board pack, your board dashboard, and you got that by email this morning. Again, just a marker of tremendous activity year to date, a little more than $500 million of approvals, and that's through March. And so, you know, a quarter of the way around the year, and a more than $500 million of investment across lots of different programs. The other thing I'd mention, additional program stuff, is on the lower portion of the second page, not financial, but I think a really good indicator of all the hard work and really great work that our team does somewhat behind the scenes. You got the legal affairs sort of tracker there of, you know, how many clearances and legal reviews and open requests, sister agency checks and all things we do to make sure we stay out of trouble and do things the right way. That happened behind the scenes, led by Chris and her team principally, around all those efforts, deeply appreciated. You can see the customer care, the amount of, as we've expanded our activities and expanded what we do and how we try to impact the economy, the amount of inbounds we get from folks interested in those programs or with questions or every now and again with something to offer us for suggestions on how to do it better is tremendous. More than 1,000 incoming calls to our call center, hundreds of emails, people using our live chat. So, you know, Patience Purdy and her team, but under Bruce's leadership, Bruce Go, do a tremendous job managing that volume of because we are doing so much. We're doing so much more than we did prior to Governor Murphy coming in from a variety and diversity of what we do perspective. And so that yields lots of phone calls, lots of questions, lots of interest, and teams to lead those charges do a great job. So I wanted to give them a shout out while we're here. With that, I will take a deep breath and say, yield the floor back to you. Any questions, et cetera?
Any questions? Okay, we're going to move to the public comment section of the meeting. People may recall that at the March board meeting, this is the first time we moved the public comment section from the end of the board meeting to essentially the beginning of the board meeting. So we're now going to move to that section. I want to open the public comment portion of the meeting. I'm going to ask Danielle Esser to share NJEDA's public comment policy and process for this board meeting. Danielle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As stated in NJEDA's public comment policy, members of the public who wish to speak during the public comment period will be acknowledged to speak first in person, then by phone during this portion of the meeting. Anyone attending the meeting by phone who is interested in providing public comment can press 1, then 0 on their telephone keypad to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue based on the order received. Each speaker will be prompted to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization affiliation, and the topic on which the remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. A person may not speak more than once during the same public comment period to ensure there's enough time for all those who wish to speak, and related documents, printed comments, and materials may be attached to an email. And just as a reminder, there will not be another public comment period at the end of the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Danielle. I want to now acknowledge any members who wish to provide public comments in the room at this time. Okay, seeing none, why don't we go to the phone operator? Can you ask for any comments?
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, for members of the public on the phone, if you would like to ask a question, please press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, you may press 1-0 at this time. One moment, please. And we have no questions from the public. You may continue.
Thank you, operator. All right, we'll move forward now. We're going to go, I'm going to give the policy committee report. As I think, just to remind everyone, between board meetings, members of the board on various committees meet with EDA staff to review the items that are going to be presented at the actual board meeting for approval. These committee meetings are quite interactive and, at least from my perspective, they're really great to allow the board to have time to spend with the staff to get behind the programs, the many programs, and the varied programs that we're going to consider today. The other thing that we've been doing at these board meetings is as we present an item for approval, we generally put up a PowerPoint here in the room that reminds everyone of the context of this approval, what program it's in, what the history of that program and scope is, just to try to keep everybody focused because, Tim had said before, and the dashboard indicates we have so many programs that we are administering here. So the NJEDA Policy Committee met on March 28th. We had a robust agenda, as I mentioned. The big news that we're going to turn to in a moment is the proposal to create a new subsidiary of the EDA, which will be the New Jersey Green Bank. And we will also be considering today the creation of the Green Workforce Training Grant Challenge, a competitive grant program to implement workforce and skill development to strengthen and diversify the green economy talent pipeline. We also discussed and staff presented the committee with a recommendation for the pre-development agreement between NJEDA, Rutgers University, and University Hospital for collaboration and funding for activities related to the development of the University Hospital and Rutgers Academic Health Center campus in Newark. We'll be talking about that today. Following this, staff presented the committee with two recommendations for contract awards, one for the Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Center, and one for Business and Information Technology Consulting Services, which we will discuss today. Next, the committee considered two recommendations for updates to delegations of authority, one pertaining to litigation, compromise, and settlement of claims, and one pertaining to approval of NJ Innovation Evergreen Fund qualified venture firms. And again, as I think everyone knows, we've been looking at these delegations of authority as a way to streamline these meetings and allow the board to focus on weighty matters. And the last voting item presented to the committee was a request for additional funds for phase one of the child care facilities improvement program. So now to move on with the actual agenda, the first item is the request for the New Jersey Green Bank subsidiary approval. Brian?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. I'm here to present for the board's approval the formation of a wholly owned subsidiary of the EDA called the New Jersey Green Bank, which will be a financial organization designed to advance the state's efforts to equitably meet its climate goals. To establish the Green Bank as a subsidiary, the EDA board is being specifically asked to approve an authorizing resolution for the Green Bank, which will give the subsidiary all the powers of the EDA, except the power to contract debt independently of the EDA. Also included in the authorizing resolution are the following documents: one, an agreement and certificate of incorporation for the Green Bank, which will be filed with the Secretary of State; two, the Green Bank bylaws; and three, a memorandum of understanding between the EDA and the Green Bank outlining various shared services. There is prior precedent for the EDA establishing a subsidiary, namely the Schools Construction Corporation in 2003 pursuant to the State Subsidiary Act, and in line with that Subsidiary Act, the Green Bank will be set up with a board that at all times contains an EDA staff majority. Additionally, to ensure that the EDA board is regularly apprised of the subsidiary's activities, the Green Bank will provide it with regular quarterly and annual reports. The Green Bank, the name of which the EDA has received formal approval for from the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance, will not be a retail bank, but instead will prioritize deploying capital through debt, credit enhancements, and other products into project categories aligned with the state's climate goals, including the ones mentioned earlier: zero-emission transportation, building decarbonization and resiliency, and clean energy generation and storage. Governor Murphy and the state legislature have continuously expressed support for a Green Bank entity that can help mobilize private capital participation at the scale needed to meet the state's climate targets, from its inclusion in the 2019 Energy Master Plan through the supplemental appropriation of $40 million to the EDA as seed capital for this initiative at the end of the last fiscal year. That $40 million would be transferred from the EDA to the Green Bank as part of the proposed authorizing resolution. Outside of that seed capital, no EDA funds will be linked to the Green Bank. Beyond that $40 million, however, the EDA has been actively pursuing other funding opportunities made available at the federal level to bolster the Green Bank's planned capital base, including permanent grant capital through the Environmental Protection Agency's Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund competition, as well as low-cost capital available at the Department of Energy Loan Programs Office. We are very excited to share that just last week the EPA announced that one of the lead applicants that we supported as a named sub-awardee for the aforementioned competitions, the Coalition for Green Capital, was selected for a $5 billion award from which the Green Bank can access an allocation for the state once it enters into a sub-awardee agreement with the Coalition for Green Capital in the coming months. We believe that the establishment of the Green Bank as a subsidiary specifically is necessary and desirable for several reasons, which we have summarized into two main categories. One, that it will enhance the Green Bank's ability to eliminate market barriers for private capital participation, including by attracting capital via public-private partnerships and offering de novo financing structures in a way that resembles other successful state Green Banks. And two, that it will give the Green Bank the needed operational processes to deploy its own capital in a market-responsive and expeditious manner, including by allowing it to align its execution and procedures with industry standards, to ring-fence exposure, and to just generally be an entity solely focused on climate-related investments and financial assistance that can thus more easily attract green finance expertise. Overall, we strongly believe that the formation of this subsidiary is a pivotal step and the state's continued push to meet the ongoing challenges of climate change. Thank you all so much for your time, and I'm happy to open up for any questions.
I mean, before there's any, if there are any questions, first of all, great job, Ryan. And shout out to Rob and Ryan in particular for leading the charge on all of this. This is a complex, big deal, as was the application for the federal money, which is a big deal in its own right. We're talking potentially nine digits of federal funding to support this, in addition to the $40 million that the governor and legislature allocated last year. So coming out of the blocks with a big nine digits product offering, we think is going to be a big deal here as a way to really supercharge and catalyze space clean energy transition, and importantly, create a lot of really good jobs. So I'm all for the energy efficiency and clean energy stuff for a number of reasons, but professionally, it's going to create a lot of good, overwhelmingly union jobs in energy efficiency investments and building retrofits and deployment of electric vehicles and charging stations and all that jazz. So it's a huge opportunity to both do well on the environment side, but also create a lot of jobs and a lot of economic opportunity for New Jersey families.
Nate, I know we discussed this in the committee, but again, just to be clear for everyone, this is a subsidiary of the EDA. It will be controlled, the board will be controlled by a majority of EDA appointees who will be EDA staff members. We'll be making a $40 million allocation of capital equity into the bank, the subsidiary.
That's strictly equity. Yes.
Okay. We'll be advancing $40 million to the subsidiary.
Correct. Yes.
That is the extent of our exposure at this point in time.
And even strictly speaking, that was an appropriation, so it was not, that's not bound. We're not transferring any more.
Got it.
Out of balance sheet.
And we will not be guaranteeing the performance of the subsidiary.
We can't lean around and make sure that one, but...
Correct. So this is truly meant to be a... I don't want to say self-sustaining, but between our capital injection and the capital that we receive from the Department of Energy,
EPA,
that will be the economic base of the subsidiary.
Yes, absolutely.
And anything else the legislature and governor choose? Sure. Or other people want to lend us money.
Plus, we retain earnings as we go forward.
Yes. Questions in the room?
I'm very excited.
Anyone on the phone, any board members have any questions, further discussion?
Chairman, it's Jen Bauer. I just wanted to congratulate the team. I think this is really exciting and innovative and just proud to be part of it.
Thank you, Jen. Great. Anyone else?
Chair, yes, this is Charles Sarlo. Chair, like you had said, part of the process here is for the committees to vet these types of all the things being presented to the board. This one, I think, as you and Ginny know, since we all participated in the policy committee, was vetted pretty heavily by the board members before being presented to the full board. It's a great opportunity for the state. It's going to be well run. I think Tim and his staff has done an unbelievable job to get the funding to kick this green bank off, and it's a very exciting opportunity. And I think, you know, in the follow-up to the committee meeting, the staff did follow up with all of the necessary information to make at least myself feel comfortable moving forward. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Charles. Those are great comments. Anyone else on the phone? Hearing no further, sorry, go ahead.
My apologies. Did you want to go to the public again?
No. Sorry, this is meant for the board members on the phone.
Very good. I apologize.
Thank you, operator. Okay, hearing no further questions or discussions, could I hear a motion to approve the formation of the New Jersey Green Bank?
Dragon motion.
Can I hear a second?
Second. I'm sorry.
Yep, great. We're good. Thank you very much. Any other further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the motion passes. Congratulations. All right, continuing in the same vein, the next item is the Wind Institute, New Jersey Green Workforce
Training Grant Challenge. Good morning, Kathy.
The Green Institute staff is requesting the approval of the Green Workforce Training Grant, a competitive program for applicants that can provide skill development, workforce training, job placement, and other related workforce supports to implement workforce development programs in order to bolster the green economy talent pipeline in the state. A total of $7 million will be available, with minimum and maximum awards set at $250,000 and $1.5 million, respectively. $7 million total, $2.65 million will be provided through the Offshore Wind Sector Initiative's MOU between EDA and BPU from October 2023. EDA and DEP approved at the March 2024 EDA board meeting. That furthers the work of the Governor's Council on the Green Economy. Eligible applicants can include, but are not limited to, the following: community-based organizations, nonprofit or private workforce organizations, labor unions, technical high schools, county colleges, other nonprofit organizations, regional workforce development boards, and for-profit companies. Applicants must include a minimum of one community-based organization that serves one or more New Jersey overburdened communities as part of their application. Proposed initiatives must focus on one or two, but no more than two, of the following industries: offshore wind, other renewable energy technologies, green design and construction, environmental and green infrastructure, grid resilience, clean transportation, and energy efficiency. Eligible uses of the grant funding include costs associated with planning, soft launch, capital costs of no more than 30% of the grant amount can be used for construction of those capital costs, and implementation costs. The evaluation committee will review and rank proposals based on five criteria, and the minimum score required to be considered for an award is 80 points, and the maximum is 100 points. Funding will be made available according to the following criteria: $2.65 million to fund offshore wind programs, $4.35 million to fund proposals across all eligible industries, including offshore wind. If a proposal covers both offshore wind and one other eligible industry, EDA, at its discretion, may combine funds from the Council on the Green Economy and the Wind Institute. Applicants whose applications are declined will have the right to appeal. All declinations based on discretionary reasons will be brought to the EDA board for approval. Selected applicants will enter into a grant agreement with EDA, and funds will be dispersed in three disbursements following submitted reports and documentation of met milestones. The term of the grant period for respective awarded applicants will meet the following criteria: for programs that do not involve program design components and only include program implementation, the term of the grant cannot exceed 2 years. For programs that include both program design and implementation, the term of the grant can be a maximum of 3 years, with no more than 1 year of the 3-year term dedicated to program design. Thank you for your time, and I would be able to take any questions that the board may have on this grant challenge.
Any questions in the room? Anyone on the phone? Any discussion? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve? Thank you. Second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
We'll get Jenny that one. Thank you, Jenny.
I tried to poll for a second.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions?
Cameron's Robert Chimko. I'm going to have to recuse myself.
Got it, Robert.
Thank you.
All right, Robert, can you state the reason for the record?
Potential application if labor unions are going to be involved in it.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Robert.
It's great judgment. We hope they will. So that's good.
Okay, the motion passes. Thank you, Kathy. Next is a request for additional funds for the Child Care Facilities Improvement Program Phase 1. Alexandra.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
To kick this off, I'd like to share some updated numbers with you since I've been here, since I was last here in February. Just to reiterate the enormous impact we're having on the early childhood sector in New Jersey and furthering Governor Murphy's goals for the sector. As of April 1st, we've approved 182 applications for almost $38 million for much-needed improvements to child care facilities across the state. The most common improvements are around renovating playgrounds that in some cases are 20 years old, addressing flooring issues that lead to tripping hazards and other health and safety issues for both the adults and children in the facility, and replacing windows that are either sealed shut or leak when it rains, all conditions that no child should be in. These grants will impact almost 17,000 children and 4,100 members of the early childhood workforce. We also currently have 190 applications in various stages of review and 316 applications that have yet to be reviewed. Almost $4 million have been dispersed, and we're looking forward to sharing some completed projects with the board very soon. This board's already approved over $75 million, and I'm here today for a request for additional funds. Staff are requesting the approval of an additional $30 million for the Phase 1 program. Specifically, the remaining $14.5 million in ARP funding, of which 2.5% will go towards administrative expenses to help process all of those applications, as well as $15.5 million in state funds appropriated to the EDA during the fiscal year 24 budget. Finally, we're also asking for delegated authority to the CEO to accept up to $50 million for additional federal, state, or county funding for Phase 1. This program remains oversubscribed, even with the $30 million requested today. The delegated authority would allow us to approve more grants as quickly as possible when additional funds become available, including what's anticipated in the next fiscal year budget. Thank you so much for your time, and open for any questions anyone has.
So again, just to be clear, it's $30 million today, and then delegated authority to accept an additional $50 million?
Correct.
Should that be made available?
Should it be made available? Yep.
Do we know how much is allocated in the budget?
In the governor's budget proposal, which is being considered by the legislature right now, so no guarantees on how it plays out, there's $15 million of additional.
Mm-hmm.
$15 million of additional funding available, proposed being made available. See how that plays out.
I'll check
in late June. We'll see how we do.
I just a comment here. I just find these numbers truly staggering. That and the fact that we're able to fulfill these kind of requests, assuming they're all approved appropriately, it has to have an amazing impact on child care in the state of New Jersey.
Absolutely, I tell my team all the time, we're changing the lives of children by creating these high quality environments. So,
what's the average amount of the awards that you're seeing?
It's around 175,000. It hovers right around there. So folks are really maximizing the total grant award, which is $200,000, and putting some serious investments into their program.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also too, this is federal funding and goes through EDA, so it makes sense to do this. We had great partnership. Keith, I know you're on. Please give my best to Rob. This is all work being done by registered contractors through the Department of Labor's registration process, so lots of good work for folks in the trades. The $150 million worth of work ain't nothing, so a lot of good work as well.
Thank you, Kim. I'll let them know.
Thanks, Kim.
Anyone on the phone? Questions, comments? Again, I know this was extensively discussed in committee as well. Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve the request for additional funds and delegated authority?
I'll move it, Supervisor.
Thank you. Second? Thank you. Any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to, or all those in favor, sorry, signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusal, or abstention? Hearing none, the motion passes. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
All right, on to authority matters.
Mary Maples and George on pre-development agreement between NJEDA, Rutgers University, and the University Hospital for collaboration and funding for activities related to the development of the academic health campus in Newark.
Thank you. Good morning, board members. So today we are delighted to present to you an agreement that would enable EDA to work with University Hospital and Rutgers to begin the process to redevelop the 60-plus acre academic health campus in Newark. For a bit of context, this is 60 or so acres of state land that's subject to a master lease with University Hospital and Rutgers through 2089. And this funding that we're using is part of $50 million that EDA received in the state's fiscal 23 budget to engage in pre-construction and capital and site development activities related to the master plan that University Hospital and Rutgers have put together for the campus. So this request is for an initial $7 million allocation so that EDA can engage in specific pre-development activities that will take us through the balance of this year. The pre-development activities include planning for relocating the staff members that are currently working in temporary structures that have been there for the last 50 years, as well as some site due diligence, environmental remediation analysis, designing documents that will enable future solicitations for the construction of new buildings in the place of those trailers, as well as the legal work and coordination needed to continue moving the project forward. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have, but this is the first step in what will become a long project. And to be clear, what we're requesting today is not only entering into the pre-development agreement and spending up to $7 million, but also delegation to our CEO to enter into the specific contracts needed to engage in these pre-development activities. Naturally, those contracts will be negotiated pursuant to the authorities' policies and procedures and legal authorities.
And again, just to be clear, this is part of the $50 million overall allocation?
Yes. So we have a $50 million allocation. The spending deadline for that money is the end of December 2026. And so, you know, time's of the essence to get these projects moving.
That's federal ARP money.
Any questions in the room? Any questions on the phone or discussion? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Second motion.
Could I hear a second?
Jamira, I'll second.
Thank you, Jamira. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Chairman, aye. I work with a number of majority firms that have represented mine.
Thank you. Any other recusals or abstentions or opposition on the phone? Hearing none, the motion passes. Mary, are you going to do the next one with Tara?
Tara, that's going to start.
Tara's going to do it? Okay,
yeah.
Great. So this is a recommendation for award of concerning the Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Center. Tara Colton.
And as I gave some of the foregrounding for this during my CEO report, but this is a big deal. We've been at the, under the First Lady's leadership, and now under Lisa's leadership, the effort to bring a world-class Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Center to the city of Trenton has been underway for many, many years. This is a milestone moment where we're about to reveal who the potential partners are, who the lead partners are. They're not potential partners, it's them. And we're really excited. We think we've got a really strong crop of responses here and a hand of cards that could be a winning hand here that really drive enduring change, not just here in Trenton, but ideally a model that is statewide and ultimately national. First Lady laid out a long time ago, and that's what we're hopefully advancing here today. Tara, and then we're going to ask Lisa maybe if she wants to offer any perspective.
Yeah, great. So just to kind of reiterate and build upon what Tim said, and I was very upset I wasn't able to be here a couple weeks ago when the MIA authority had their inaugural meeting. I was actually at Legoland with my kids and said I thought it was kind of appropriate because it has been a bit of a roller coaster at times, and we've been building things. So I'll belabor the analogy there, but really grateful to be here for this this milestone. Before we, I just share a bit about what we're asking you to do, I wanted to just start with a couple thank yous. to Pamela Taylor, who's our senior advisor for maternal health, who was here in front of the board a few months ago asking for some of the $75 million in funding that we have awarded for this. She promised she would be back, but she is actually out of the country in Nigeria this week, so she is unable to be here, but she deserves tremendous credit for helping to lead this forward. Also really want to help thank Mary for her help over the past several months in making this happen, as well as Emily Apple, our former team member who helped shepherd this. And then I have to give a huge thanks to Maurice Griffin and Ted Panikos in our procurement department who have worked with us and shepherded what is a very unusual procurement, so I appreciate their partnership. Before I get into what we're asking you to do, I did want to just honor a commitment that I've made throughout this process, which is that we've been really focused on keeping the voices of the women of Trenton and women impacted by the scourge of racial disparities in maternal health at the center of this conversation. So I just wanted to read you a quote from one of the women that took part in the ongoing community engagement process, and I think it reinforces why we're doing this. This is a quote about supports that are available in Trenton. Quote, I just don't think when you look at our world and look at all the structures that are in place, there's really a lack of consistency, right? You say you care about us, but you do something different. You say that you want things to be different for us or for our community, but there's not a lot around me that says that matters, what you're saying. So I think to me that means it's not sincere, it's not authentic. So we're here to change that. And I think understanding the foundation that we're building on and the path we have ahead, we're really excited about what we're bringing to you today. So what we are here to do is to request the board's approval to award a recommendation for the request for proposals that we issued and to award the highest scoring bidders for the three lead roles for the Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Center. Just as a reminder, we did a request for qualifications about a year ago for a lead clinical health care services provider, a lead institution of higher education, and a lead Trenton-based multi-service organization. Those were the only eligible entities that could then apply for the RFP. And the three lead highest scoring bidders for the lead clinical healthcare services is Capital Health. For the lead institution of higher education is Rutgers, led by the Rutgers School of Nursing, but notably in a consortium with five other institutions of higher education, Mercer County Community College, Stockton, TCNJ, and Thomas Edison, as well as a connection with Princeton. And then as the lead Trenton-based multi-service organization, Trenton Health Team. We're also requesting the ability to delegate to the CEO the authority to finalize any remaining contract conditions that are contained within the RFP documents. The award is granting the three leads one five-year contract for each of the three lead roles with the possibility of two additional five-year extensions. In exchange, they'll be provided with space in the Maternal and Infant Health Center to provide and deliver specific services focused on addressing maternal health challenges here in Trenton, in New Jersey, and nationally. And once the award is finalized, the lead tenants will negotiate leases and the agreements. This is also something we've been developing kind of in parallel with the Maternal Infant Health Innovation Authority, MIA, and so fully anticipate that as that authority under Lisa's amazing leadership starts to take shape, that there will be a coordination and ultimately some transition of the day-to-day programmatic work that we've been privileged to lead. So and final thing, just as a reminder, we have $75 million federal and state funding secured to build this building. So we now know who we want to provide services there and preview for next month. Planning to come to you for approval to buy the location that we want to build in. So finally, really, thank you and happy to answer.
Any questions? Anyone in the room? Anyone on the phone? Further discussion?
Very exciting.
Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Dragon motion.
Thank you. A second?
Mr. Mayor, I'll second it.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions?
Thank you.
Okay. Hearing none, the motion is approved. All right. We're going to move on next to Emma.
Yeah, if it's okay, Chairman, just recognize Lisa for a moment or two.
Sure, come on up.
Introduce yourself to us. Some of us know her well and think the world of her, but not all of you know her yet. That's true.
I'm famous at home behind that.
Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here, and this is really a moment for me. The MIA, the Maternal Infant Health Innovation Authority, has really been established as the first in the nation and the only of its kind. And I have the distinct pleasure of being the first president and CEO. And in this room, about 2 weeks ago around this time, is when I was appointed into this role. So I really want to thank the EDA for all of the work that they've done to get us to this point. But I just want to talk just a little bit about MIA. The goal of this authority is to make New Jersey the safest and the most equitable place in the nation to have a baby and raise that baby. We are expected to have statewide reach, national reach, and even global reach. So when, Tim, you were talking about all the global missions, I hope that MIA eventually accompanies you on some of that work. But the thing that we're doing that is different is we're really doing this from a whole-of-government approach. It's not just about prenatal care, postpartum care, doctor's visits. It's about everything. It's about food. It's about transportation. It's about employment. I'd love to see some of the MIA cohorts get involved in the green economy that you talked about. But it's really about all of those things, and we also recognize that the answers don't just come from government. They come from community as well. So thank you, Tara, for reading that quote to really keep us grounded and reminded of the importance of this work. We are excited. Today is, like I said, a moment because we now have the three anchor tenants that will be doing this work with us. But I really just want to stand here to say thank you to the EDA. Thank you for shepherding us to this moment. You know, I'm excited about the work ahead. I'm thinking about the AI economy and the things that we can do around maternal health. We are talking about digital tools, ways to help people track their progress, ways to help people feel heard and listened to. So I will be back. You will continue to see me at these EDA meetings. I thank you for your time. I thank you for your attention and really for getting us to this moment today. Thank you.
Emma.
This is close to you guys.
Yeah. Don't even like 3 feet closer. It's like, reach out, shake your hand when you're done.
It's intimidating.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. The members of the board are asked to approve the award of a contract for business and information technology consulting and advisory services to Boston Consulting Group, BCG, for a total of $900,000 for 6 months of support for the information technology workstream, the fourth and final component of the contract approved at board last month. In July of 2022, as you folks are aware, the EDA received approval to enter into a strategic management consulting services contract with McKinsey & Company to provide consulting services to the authorities for product development, IT, accounting, and financial reporting departments. In order to continue the forward progress made during this support model, the authority issued a request for proposals in October of 2023 to further the creation and optimization of scalable and sustainable structures and processes within the EDA's centralized functions to meet our continued demand for services. The RFP aims to procure a management consulting company to provide expertise and strategic consulting services for human resources, IT, accounting and financial reporting, and the Office of CEO across an array of internal functions. Specifically for IT, this includes capacity building, implementation support for new processes, process improvement, including digitization, and IT strategic planning. The RFP was issued through state contract M4010, the Business and Information Technology Consulting and Advisory Services contract, procured through the Division of Purchase and Property within the New Jersey Department of the Treasury. The authority submitted a request through DPP central intake process and received responses on January 9, 2024, from three vendors on the M4010 contract. Those vendors were Barry Dunn, McNeil & Parker, the Boston Consulting Group, and McKinsey & Company. In response, the authority reviewed all three proposals, which included responses for all four work streams. Proposals were reviewed by a committee of staff and were evaluated off of the following criteria: approach to the project and prior experience, project timetable, summary of qualifications and experience of personnel, and proposed budget. Upon review of all three proposals, staff determined that Barry Dunn could not satisfy the full requirements of the scope of work, only responding to partial components, and was removed from consideration. The evaluation committee then determined that Boston Consulting Group was ranked the highest for the IT task due to their expertise with similarly related authorities,
in technical consulting, including IT systems, IT optimization and integration, and utilization of the CRM PaaS platform, which the EDA uses. After several back-and-forth communications for the vendor's best and final offers, the total price from Boston Consulting Group for the IT workstream was $900,000. Staff concluded that the pricing was reasonable given the work to be performed and the proposed deliverables. It was further determined that BCG's submission, including their pricing, is the most advantageous to the EDA, price and other factors considered.
Emma, remind me, do we have any other RFPs open for our...
For consulting services?
Yes.
Because we awarded one to McKinsey at the last board meeting.
Yeah, they have the three of the four work streams on consulting here from that closed out for.
Any questions? Anyone on phone questions, comments? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Antoine Johnson.
Second. Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you, Emma. John Keeney on updates to delegation of authority.
All I think about is the distance to the podium. Keep
getting closer with every speaker.
Members are asked to approve an update to an existing delegation of authority to settle and compromise claims involving or impacting the authority. This request involves two pieces, to expand the existing delegated authority to the CEO to settle and compromise claims brought against any EDA program, and to request authority to settle and compromise a claim brought by the EDA against a third party. Historically, delegation of authority to settle and compromise has been program specific. Special loan management, post-closing, bond financing, and real estate being the primary ones. In those instances, settlement was capped by the board at $500,000. This memo requests delegated authority authorized to the CEO to settle claims against any EDA program or asset or contract. Specifically, settlement authority up to $500,000 for pre-litigation and litigation with third parties where third parties tendered a defense of EDA and EDA or insurance is not required to remit payment directly. Settlement authority up to $500,000 where EDA or its insurance desires to settle a claim against EDA in exchange for a general release. And situations where EDA has made one or more affirmative claims against a third party and EDA desires to compromise its claim up to $500,000 less than the total value of the claim. In instances where EDA is a named party, settlement would still need to be approved by the CEO and the Attorney General's office. This delegation would also apply to situations where EDA is not yet a named party, but may have a financial instance. For instance, situations where an EDA contractor may be sued, and ultimately the cost will be borne by EDA, or in a pre-litigation posture where a notice to sue has been issued, but litigation has not started. This update and expansion is aligned with the board's previous settlement delegations to specific programs. There would be regular reporting of any settlements at audit committee. And like those specific programs, this delegated authority will allow the authority to move quickly in response to certain litigation postures without having to spend significant litigation costs. I'd be taking questions.
So again, the overall cap remains $500,000.
That's correct.
And what we're really doing is expanding it from specific programs to a broad set of potential claims.
That's right. And also any affirmative claims that EDA is making against third parties.
Any questions? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Can you hear a motion to approve?
Dragon motion.
Second?
Antoine Johnson.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you. Ginny, we're going to turn to incentives. Do you want to give a quick incentives committee report?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, the incentive committee met on March 22nd, and we have three items under consideration. The first two are Aspire applications. Both of them are in Newark. One is on 430 Market Street, and the second one is on Fulton Street in Newark. And in addition, the staff will present a recommendation for an ERG ERG modification on the Patterson Parking Authority. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane.
Mr. Chairman, we actually have another item under delegations of authority.
Is there a
good
one?
Yes.
Yeah, I saw that. All right.
I was just crossing things up too quickly. I'm sorry. Thank you. All right, Jenny, thank you for the report. Hold that thought for a minute. We're going to go back. Alexander is going to present on the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Fund qualified venture firm approval process.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm pleased to be with you all today to present a request for the members to approve an update to the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Program Delegations of Authority to include approvals and non-discretionary declinations of qualified venture firm applicants under the program. As a reminder, the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Act was signed into law by Governor Murphy as part of the Economic Recovery Act of 2020, and the program is broken up into three primary components. First, selling tax credits and evaluating corporate partners' strategic commitments to support the state's innovation ecosystem. There are a series of competitive tax credit options to fund program investments and expenses. Second, evaluating applications from venture capital firms to receive a designation as a qualified venture firm under the program. And third, evaluating applications for co-investments from qualified venture firms to co-invest into New Jersey innovative high-growth businesses. Today's request for additional delegations of authority is limited to the second part of the program, reviewing applications received from venture capital firms for approval as qualified venture firms under the program, which will allow firms to participate on the platform and apply for program co-investment capital. The members will retain approval authority over any initial program qualified investments where dollars are first deployed into the businesses. Qualified venture firm approvals follow an objective and formulaic board-approved process, as outlined in Appendix B of the memorandum. Applicants are assessed to confirm they meet program eligibility criteria through achieving a minimum acceptable score through the program's weighted criteria evaluation model, which has been approved by the board, and any further changes to the venture firm evaluation model will continue to be approved by the board members. Qualified venture firm approvals have become routine, with the members approving qualified venture firms at 5 of the 9 board meetings between the date of first approval on May 10, 2023, and the most recent board meeting on March 7, 2024. 13 qualified venture firms are currently on the Evergreen Fund platform. The firms collectively control $5.3 billion in aggregate assets under management and are headquartered in locations throughout the U.S. and abroad. We will continue to approve qualified venture firms at a similar rate on an ongoing basis to expand the opportunity set of venture capital firms available to support innovative and high-growth New Jersey businesses. As a reminder, the members previously approved a request to approve program follow-on investments through delegated authority with certain exceptions. To reiterate today's request, the members are being asked to approve an update to the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Program Delegations Authority to now include approvals and non-discretionary declinations of qualified venture firms under the program. Consistent with the authority's delegation policy approved on March 9, 2022, all delegations are to the CEO of the authority unless specified otherwise. I'd be happy to take any questions at this time if there are any.
Remind us, we did approve one investment in a company sponsored by one of these firms, correct?
Correct. Yep, in October.
Yes.
Just remember, this is just the membership card.
Yes.
Right.
I was going to say, so, I mean, since I've been on the, I think this has all occurred since I've been on the board, as you point out there, we've done 13 of these, and I would say they've become somewhat routine in board approval. So they meet a, pre-agreed screening process, and they're approved. So all we're doing is saying, you now have a membership card, but to make any capital commitment, that capital commitment still comes to the board.
Exactly.
Any questions? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? I apologize for skipping this. Just trying to help Diane.
Can
I hear a motion to approve?
Second?
I'll second it, Mayor.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any recusals or abstentions or opposition? Go But hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you. Jenny, thank you for your report. We'll now head to the actual motions or proposals. The first up is an Aspire proposal on SUWK Urban Renewal LLC, and Annie is going to present.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
We are seeking approval to award roughly $52,338,353 in Aspire tax credits for a mixed-income residential project in Newark, located at 430 Market Street in the Ironbound section, steps away from Penn Station. And those that are familiar with Newark, it's a lot behind the former Iberia restaurant. The applicant is proposing the ground-up construction of a 13-story building with 225 residential units, including studios, one and two bedroom units, and also includes roughly 2,000 square feet of ground floor commercial space. The unit mix includes 180 market rate units and 45 affordable. Those affordable units will have affordability levels as low as 35% of the area median income, making the project 20% affordable. The memo also provides further project details, including unit sizing, pricing, and building amenities. Ownership of the applicant is represented by four individuals, each with equal share. There is a non-owning manager that pledged personal capital as needed for sponsor equity. The total development cost is roughly $119.8 million. And to help size the award, we excluded costs that are prohibited by statute and program rules, including land, developer fee, and construction interest incurred after the issuance of a temporary certificate of occupancy, as well as construction interest in excess of the 20% cap on costs. This brings the total eligible project cost to around $87 million. The required developer equity contribution is 20% and is equal to roughly $24 million, and in this case, the developer is contributing roughly $37 million, well above that minimum requirement. We subject the applicant's request to the program's various award caps. In this case, the project is eligible to receive up to $60% of total eligible cost, or $90 million, whichever is less. And that is how we arrived at the previously mentioned award of the roughly $52 million. To help size the award, we looked at the project's rate of return. In this case, we used a hurdle rate model provided by JLL. With the benefit of the Aspire tax credit, the equity IRR is 11.28%, which is below the hurdle rate for comparable multifamily residential developments in Newark of 17.69%. Because this project is receiving low-income housing tax credits and JHMFA's deferred fee model was also used to measure the appropriate and reasonable rate of return, the total developer fee is roughly $9.2 million with roughly $9.1 deferred and not fully realized until after the eighth year of operations following stabilization, and this conforms to the agency's policy. And based on these factors, we are recommending an Aspire award of $52,338,353 for board approval. Happy to take any questions at this time.
Any questions in the room? Questions on the phone? Again, this was well discussed in committee. Any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Robert Shemka, motion.
Thank you, Robert. Antoine. Jewel, can we consider that a second?
Yes.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to, or vote to approve? All in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, refusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the motion passes. On the next item, out of an abundance of caution, in order to avoid a potential conflict of interest, I'm going to recuse. From the next item is Goldman Sachs. My former employer is a potential lender for this project, and I'm going to ask Vice Chairman Charles Sarlo to lead the board through the next vote.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to ask Renee Pratt, Senior Product Officer, Real Estate Investment Programs, to present to the board the Fulton Street Newark LLC project under the Aspire program. Renee?
Good morning. We are seeking your approval for an award up to $90 million in Aspire tax credits for the project known as 22 Fulton Street, which will entail the new construction of a mixed-income residential development. The project site is situated on the light rail line and is within a 15-minute walk from the North 10 and North Broad Street rail stations. The applicant is proposing a 22-story building with 396 residential units on an existing parking lot. The project consists of studios, one- and two-bedroom units, with 20% of the units having affordability levels at 50% or less of the area median income. There will also be 106 parking spaces of park structured parking, various amenities, and 4,276 square feet of commercial retail space. The board memo also provides more details, including the rents for the affordable units and specific breakdown of income affordability levels. The new building will comply with HMSA's and EDA's green building standards. The applicant, 22 Fulton Street North LLC, is jointly owned by Berger Fulton LLC at 45% and several other entities by lesser percentages, and Miles Berger is principal of the lead development entity, the Berger Organization. A legal review was completed on the applicant, lead development entity, and related entities by the authority, and all entities were cleared. The total development budget is $213,404,963. To help size the award, we exclude costs that are prohibited by statute and program rules, including land, the developer fee, construction interest incurred after issuance of TCO, as well as construction interest in excess of 20% cap on soft costs. This brings the total eligible cost to $171,496,934. The developer must contribute at least 20% equity, or in this case, roughly $42.6 million. The equity in this project, when accounting for LIHTC, cash equity, and deferred developer fee, far exceeds that number at roughly $63.9 million, exceeding the required minimum. The sources table in the memo shows there are other sources of debt and public funds in the deal. We subject the applicant's request to the program's various award caps. In this case, the project is eligible to receive up to 60% of total eligible cost or $90 million, whichever is less. To help further size the award, we looked at the project's rate of return. In this case, we used the hurdle rate model provided by EDA's contract consultant, Jones Lang LaSalle. With the benefit of the Aspire tax credit, the equity IRR is 15.54%, which is below the hurdle rate for comparable developments of 22.44%. Additionally, because the project is receiving low-income housing tax credits, NJHMFA's deferred fee model was used to measure the appropriate and reasonable rate of return. The developer fee is estimated at $26 million, with $14 million deferred not fully realized until after the 30th year of operation following stabilization. This conforms to HMFA policy. Based on the aforementioned factors, we are recommending an Aspire award up to $90 million for board approval. If approved, this project would be built and ready for occupancy within 24 months of construction start. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Renee. Do I have a motion to approve?
Second motion. Just a reminder, guys, it's still a lodge. I'm recused from this. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. We have a motion. Do I have a second?
Yeah, good. Second. So if you can state the reason for recusal on the record.
We have any discussions, questions, comments?
Hang on a second. Hey, Bill, can you just articulate why
yeah, the county, I believe the county's involved with the owner and the project here, so thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry, Charles, go ahead.
Okay. Thanks, Tim. Okay. Any questions, discussions, comments by the board members? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Need a second first.
Okay. I'll second it. Antoine
Johnson. Thank you. Okay. We have a first. We have a second on the motion. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, and we have two recusals on the record, the chairman and board member Phil Loggia. Motion passes. Thank you.
My LG has 24 months, apparently. You should probably get the heck out of here. Get building that thing.
Thank you, Charles. Returning to my agenda, on the next item is Heather presenting on an ERG modification. So I just like saying that.
As Heather takes the stage, ERG may not be the most immediately recalled program. It's a program that actually sunset, except for Patterson, in 2019. Patterson had and has a special allocation of bespoke tax credits just for Patterson through the ERG program, which lives on for some period into the future. I forget exactly when, but not terribly far off into the future. And so this program is, this last vestige of the ERG program is still with us. And Heather's going to give us an update on a project that has unique characteristics as part of this unique part of that program. It's a bit of a custom suit. It is not a off-the-rack suit here in Patterson.
So as created by statute in 2013, the Economic Redevelopment and Growth Program offered state incentive grants to finance development projects that demonstrated a financing gap. In 2015, legislation was enacted allowing municipal redevelopers to apply for tax credits under the mixed-use parking ERG program for mixed-use parking projects. The maximum reimbursement is up to 100% of the total eligible project cost allocatable to the parking component of the project and 40% of the total eligible project cost allocatable to the office space and retail component of the project. The members of the EDA board approved an award under the mixed-use parking ERG program to the Parking Authority of the City of Patterson in December of 2018. Today, PPA is requesting the board's approval to modify the scope of work of its proposed parking garage located at 169 Ward Street in the City of Patterson to adjust the ERG award amount not to exceed $40 million from $34.5 million and to extend its conditions to maintain approval due date from December 31, 2022 to November 30, 2024. Due to the increased construction and labor costs resulting from the pandemic, supply chain issues, and the passage of time, PPA redesigned the parking garage by reducing the size of the project from the original approval in 2018. The original project consisted of a nine-story, 940 parking space structure with 2,750 square feet of street-level retail space. The new project will be a six-story, 750-space garage, along with 2,750 square feet of retail space at street level. The current timeline for the project calls for a construction period of 20 months to begin in August 2024, with completion by April 2026, including the TCO. This is consistent with the mixed-use parking requirement for TCO submission by June 30, 2026. Based upon the legislative amendment signed by the governor in July 2022. A review of documentation was satisfactorily completed to verify the applicant's ability to access the funds needed to complete the project, including the 20% required equity contribution for mixed-use parking ERG projects. A revised pro forma was reviewed to evaluate if there is a shortfall in project development economics pertaining to the return on investment for the applicant and their ability to attract the required investment for this project. Equity IRR without the benefit of ERG is -5.69%, and with the ERG is 5.39%. The equity IRR of 5.39% with the benefit of ERG is significantly below the hurdle rate model approved by EDA's contract consultant JLL, which indicates a maximum IRR of 14.79% for a parking project located in the City of Patterson. Based on our review of the modification application for the Parking Authority of the City of Patterson, we have found that it is consistent with the eligibility requirements of the Act. It is recommended that the members approve and authorize the authority to issue a revised approval letter to the applicant. Thank you.
So this hasn't begun construction?
No.
And is there a deadline on when it needs to be done?
It has to be, they have to have a TCO issued by June 30th, 2026.
Essentially 2 years.
Yeah. and they expected TPO by April.
But for the 6-year delay on the front end.
They expected TPO by April of 2026, so that would leave them a little bit of room.
Don't discount the possibility of the legislature extend that deadline. Wouldn't bet the mortgage against this.
Okay, any further discussion and questions? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve? Second? Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any recusals, opposition, or abstention? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you. Charles, you want to give a quick report on the Real Estate Committee meeting?
Yes, thank you, Chair. The Real Estate Committee met on March 28th. We had good representation. The committee considered two voting items, that being presentation on proposed rule amendments for professional service contracts, as well as a presentation regarding the awards and declination for film and digital media studio infrastructure program. Thank you.
All right, we'll move ahead with the two presentations. The first, Liz, on the film and digital media studio infrastructure program grants and declinations.
Good morning, Chairman and members of the board. I'm here to request approval for the awards and declination under the Film and Digital Media Studio Infrastructure Program. Back in December 2022, the board approved the establishment of this program as a pilot competitive application program to provide $9.5 million in grant funding to municipalities and other eligible governmental applicants in order for them to undertake infrastructure improvements and site work in support of the development of a film or digital media studio production facility. The program was established as part of the ongoing efforts in the state in investments in the film and digital media target sector and to promote strategic economic development. NJEDA launched the application back in May of 2023, and applications closed at the end of October. 8 applications were received. Following our usual standard review process, applications were reviewed initially for eligibility and threshold. We also requested clarifying information from some of the applications. During the review process, 2 applicants withdrew their applications from further consideration. A scoring committee of authority staff was established to review the applications based on the 5 criteria that was approved as part of the board structuring, including readiness, project merit, feasibility, experience, and small, women, minority, and veteran-owned business enterprise participation. There was a total of 100 points allowed, and we required that a minimum score of 65 be met to be considered and eligible for funding. The program was also set up initially so that applicants were put into 2 funding pools, 1 for those projects that were in support of studio production facilities larger than 250,000 square feet, and the second pool for those that supported facilities less than 250,000 square feet. During that review, we were able to approve or recommend for approval the highest scored applicant from each of those pools, and then the applicants were put into 1 remaining pool, and we went through scoring. As long as they met the minimum 65 points, we would recommend them for funding until all funding was awarded. So today, the members are requested to approve grants for the Borough of Carteret, $4.7 million, that was their full funding request in their application, to Jersey City Redevelopment Agency for $1.433 million, also their full funding request, and then $2,161,400 to the City of Jersey City, which is a modified lower funding amount based on clarifying information from the applicant and our review process. Also, a modified amount to Egg Harbor City of $1,029,500. And the last eligible high-scored applicant was Township of East Brunswick for $176,100. They have agreed to undertake the project as submitted in the application and will seek funding to make up the difference of the amount that we have left to provide them in funding. We also are asking for the board to approve a declination of award to the borough of Eatontown. Thank you for your consideration and happy to answer any questions.
And I just want one bit of color commentary here. One, obviously, film and TV booming across the state. You see projects here up and down the state, including as far south as Egg Harbor City, which is a great indication of the potential reach here of this industry. Carteret, in particular, is a really big potential deal. That's a huge former brownfield site right on the water in Carteret that is a potential game changer. Very significant size studio. Jersey City is supporting the expansion of Cinelli. Cinelli's was the first ground up new studio being built. The governor cut the ribbon on that in 2019, maybe early 20, I forget. But they're going to triple the size of their facility there as well. And so some really great projects out there. One thing I also just want to note, I want to give a shout out to Eatontown. We're disappointed we have to decline them, but there wasn't enough funding to fund all the applications. Mayor Tallarico has been a great partner in everything we're doing with Fort Monmouth and Netflix and all that, and we're going to do our best to figure out some way that we can be supportive of what he's trying to do with the application they made here. Not able to do it in this slug of funding, but want to be supportive where we can there.
I have one question. For the applicants with the modified amount, was that amount, that became the new amount for the scope of work that they presented, or is it just that they accepted the modified amount based on eligibility?
I'd have to say both. So, City of Jersey City, once we asked for clarifying information because we needed to make sure that it was infrastructure improvements and eligible site work, they submitted information that determined that what was eligible was the 2.1. So
it is theory, a project. So, in theory, the full amount for that eligibility.
Exactly. And similar, that happened with Egg Harbor City with clarifying information. The Township of East Brunswick, their whole project was deemed eligible, and it is a $405,000 project. We can only fund the $176,000, but the board, when they approved the program, required that if we only had so much money to offer to them, they would still need to undertake the full project and seek other funding, and they have agreed to do that.
Any further questions? Anyone on the phone with questions? So hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
That's why, Johnson.
Second?
I'll second it, Chairman.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you. And Juan, on a proposed rule amendment with respect to professional services contracts.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
We're asking the members to approve the attached proposed amendments to EEA professional service contract rules to permit special service firms, which includes architects, engineers, and surveyors, to submit to the authority a professional services qualification statement and supporting documentation, which is approved by another state agency or authority or by state entity. And in addition, we're asking that the members approve to the staff the permission to submit the required documentation and time to obtain the required approvals to finalize the rules. Currently, whether the PSQS form is kept on file for 2 years or in response to a request for qualifications or proposal, a professional service firm can only submit a professional service qualification statement on NJEDA's current form. This rule will permit firms to submit to EDA, whether kept on file for 2 years or submitted to, in response to an RFP, a PSQS form which has been approved by another state agency authority or by state entity. Staff also requests the members authorize staff to make the required submissions and obtain the required reviews and approvals to finalize the rule.
Any questions? Anyone on the phone with questions? Comments? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion.
Second?
Johnson.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you.
Tim, back over to you on remember it?
Yeah, there's only one delegated authority memo in your package about the Bioscience Center, about some lease extensions and amendments. Again, a reminder of all the things that happen that don't happen at this meeting behind the scenes. I would also note the Bioscience Center, there's a report we're sitting on. The only reason that's been published is I haven't finished reading it yet, but as soon as I do, we'll put it out and demonstrate the extraordinary economic impact that the Bioscience Center has had and is having on state and on the life sciences community and the companies it's helped nurture and grow and hopefully will do in the future, which is another coming attraction. We'll probably be coming to you at some point asking for some funding to support the next expansion, the next phase of the expansion of that great campus, but that's not for today, but that's just a coming attraction triggered by Bioscience Delegated Authority of State. Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Anyone on the phone with any questions or comments before we close? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to adjourn?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
All right, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
All right, thank you, everyone on the phone. This concludes our meeting today. Thank you, operator.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation.
I thought 90 to 100. I'm going to work on that.